Good evening. This is Mae Bressel in Carmel, California. And this is tape number 375, side A, February the 9th, 1979. Last week on tape 374, I talked about Nelson Rockefeller. And in tongue-in-cheek, the first part of the subject of Rockefeller, I asked the question about where he died at his desk, in the office or working, having a little fun in his townhouse, and also who was with him. Was it the security guard and a chauffeur, or was he alone with Megan Marshak, who hesitated to call the ambulance for 1 hour? And I also asked questions about Dr. Ernest R. Eshikoff, and did Rockefeller really have heart trouble, or was he exhumed in a hurry to hide something about that death? Of course, in listing the possible motives for killing Nelson Rockefeller, I ran out of space on the page because I wanted to ask some other questions about Megan Marshak, and I listed a few possible motives on the sheet that you have and on the tape last week. And the really primary motive I didn't go into. I'm going to go into that today, because the big answer, of course, in the political scene, in changing political offices, is the Ronald Reagan connections, the person who's going to run for president in 1980. And I believe that Ronald Reagan was that selected agent, just as Richard Nixon was selected in 1946, and then finally became the president of the United States much later, was inaugurated in 1969. I believe that Ronald Reagan was selected a long time ago to be president, and anybody who stands in his way can be eliminated. And Reagan is now campaigning on a big scale, and we'll go into that more in a few minutes. Before I get into the Rockefeller story, I do want to mention an update for you. The House Committee, the Subcommittee on Health, the very important committee in the House of Representatives, there were several people vying for chairmanship. One was Representative Richardson Pryor, who was on the House Select Committee to investigate assassinations, who has tremendous family holdings and wealth in Merrill Richardson Drug Company. And he was trying very hard to get this seat, and he lost out. It was a bitter fight, described in the Washington Post, January 31st, 1979, won out by Representative Henry A. Waxman, a Democrat from California. And the seniority system went off in this case, that there was a bitter fight of conflict of interest and so forth, and Mr. Waxman is a liberal, somebody who will make important decisions. Sometimes the head of these subcommittees seems so minute that it's hard to realize how they affect our everyday life, but when you get a person who is a liberal who is concerned about smoking statistics or cancer, and general health, health insurance, clean air standards, hospital costs, and so forth, it makes a big difference who heads those committees. Richardson Pryor was charged, as I say, of having ownership in drug company stock. He's been attacked for his position with the American Cancer Society, criticizing the statistics on smoking and defending the smoking, the people that manufacture the cigarettes. This is an important balance here that was fighting the Waxman prior for, they were fighting for the head of this subcommittee on health, this key committee. And I'm very happy to say that there is good news sometimes before we get into the gloomier side of life. And those of you that wrote letters, some of you might have, I did, about this conflict of interest with Richardson Pryor. I think that you can feel better about this now. At least there's a decent man, Representative Henry A. Waxman, who's going to head that subcommittee, and I think that this will make a difference. I hope it will. When I was doing college lectures, the question would come out often, how about the power of Rockefeller? What is the base of Rockefeller? And I kept saying over and over again that Rockefeller is a problem. Goodness knows he is a problem. But the big problem, in my mind, was Ronald Reagan and the men behind Ronald Reagan and the power of Ronald Reagan. And I think it's interesting to see the way Reagan is stepping up his campaign now that Rockefeller is gone, particularly with all the mysteries that are involved in the death of Rockefeller. There's just as many mysteries as there were in many other deaths that took place, the John Kennedy assassination, Robert Kennedy's murder, the Chappaquiddick affair, the shooting of George Wallace, the killing of Mary Jo Kopechne. The Rockefeller demise is for the same purposes, and the same people will achieve it, and it's covered up by the same teams. And I'd like to go into that in more detail with you right now and answer some of the questions that I asked last week. I asked the question, who is Meghan Marshak? And then gave a list of questions, and we'll go into those now because it's 1 week later and there's a little bit more information about her. I think that Rockefeller got what we call the Chappaquiddick affair. In the first place, the family is all quieted because a woman was involved. So they're not going to ask who did him in or how. His wife is in seclusion. Harvey Rockefeller and all of the family, I'm sure, are terribly embarrassed. And there's a hands-off policy. Nobody is talking about this. As a matter of fact, on Good Morning America, Robert Hardman didn't talk or interview people involved in the Rockefeller murder death, but he had Rhoda Barrett talking about it as if Nelson Rockefeller were a Hollywood star. Here's the head of the Chase Manhattan Bank, the governor of New York for four terms, an important man on the Council of Foreign Relations, and with his brother David Rockefeller had handpicked Jimmy Carter to be president and part of their trilateral organization. And he was relegated, not only was he vice president, but he was relegated to the movie star status this morning with Rhoda Barrett talking about the mysteries of Rockefeller and the fact that he would have lived if an ambulance had been called earlier, or probably would have. And she introduced the subject as saying nobody is beyond investigation these days. There's no such thing as private lives. So the Rockefeller matter on Good Morning America was relegated to the level of being like an Elvis Presley or movie star, that kind of gossip in Hollywood. It came from Hollywood, not from the centers of power like Washington, D.C. or New York City. Well, the Chappaquiddick affair, the similarity is by using a woman, or two women. In this case, there's two women, Conchita Pierce and Meghan Marshak. I misspelled her name last week. It has a C in it. I'm sorry. On the list, I had S-H-A-K. It has a C in there. By using women, the family's embarrassed. And again, I have always reiterated the country is run by either bullets or blackmail, and every election is determined, and even non-election years, but elections by bullet or blackmail. So Rocky didn't have to be shot. Just get him involved with a woman, and even if he were poisoned with Jim Jones' type of cyanide, we would never know because they hurried up the cremation. The effect is the same in Chappaquiddick in 1969. It seemed that Ted Kennedy could easily beat Richard Nixon in 1972. The polls were already going, and that was the talk that Ted would run in 72. And while Nelson Rockefeller wouldn't run in 1980 for President of the United States, the people that he would run or pushed aside now, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter and Reagan, is recruiting the Ford people into his camp heavily, and in the next 3 weeks he'll be setting up his offices, pulling all the Ford people to Reagan now that Rockefeller isn't there to support Ford. It's just that simple. And the man that managed Gerald Ford is now gone. It's interesting that Gerald Ford was out here at Pebble Beach at the golf tournament the weekend that Rockefeller died, and he went to New York for the funeral and then flew back and was photographed in the Monterey Herald partying as usual. I have never seen the death of a public figure handled so callously. Jimmy Carter partying at the Kennedy Center and at the White House in tuxedo and everybody having a ball. It was as if Nelson Rockefeller hadn't touched their lives in any way, even though he was behind Carter, behind Ford. The only person who showed any effect or grief was Henry Kissinger, and I can imagine why. But it was just a total blank in terms of anyone identifying with Nelson Rockefeller as having been on planet Earth or having left planet Earth. And I think that's really interesting, the way his close friends reacted to his death. It was parties as usual, quick and hurry, cremate him, get it over with, and let's get back. Now, as far as the Chappaquiddick affair and the Rockefeller affair, the Megan Marshak connections and the Pochita Pierce, the other woman involved, the one that Megan telephoned when Rocky passed out, and we'll go to that in a little bit. They're quiet. You haven't seen them. They're not interviewed. They're not available. At the time at Chappaquiddick, all the Boiler Room girls were flown off the island. They weren't seen. They weren't accessible. And they became non-persons. There wasn't any court trial. There was an inquest that was very quiet and published. But they were non-persons. And so far, Pochita Pierce and Megan Marshak are just like the Chappaquiddick Boiler Girls. They're just out of the way. And Megan will be moving back to California. She was planning to move there 2 weeks before this happened, and stated she'd be back in California, again, Reagan country, the home of J. Walter Thompson and Ronald Reagan and Donald Segretti and the Dirty Tricks Department, if you recall earlier, the political events that were shaped by California that affect Washington. So the Boiler Room girls can split up. We won't hear from them. At the time at Chappaquiddick, Ted Kennedy was with a chauffeur who was at the island, assisting him, and Nelson Rockefeller had a chauffeur, Mr. Hoffman, who was first reported with him and then wasn't with him. Evidently, he disappeared and returned again and was there when the ambulances arrived. The chauffeur was involved in Chappaquiddick because he came over the island with Senator Ted Kennedy, but Kennedy drove home alone, leaving the chauffeur in the cottage. And in this case, the chauffeur was supposed to be summoned by Pochita Pierce, of all people, but was never seen again and hasn't been seen again, and no interviews, and he was parked around the corner a block away. But except for his name being mentioned, there's not a sign of him around, at least as of this point. There was no autopsy of Mary Jo Kopechne. I had called her parents back there and told them to have an autopsy, that she could have been poisoned because she had passed out earlier and was in the back of the car when the car went over the bridge. But it was years later that they said they were sorry they didn't do the autopsy on her. But there was no autopsy on Nelson Rockefeller, and as I say, it was cremated one day ahead of time. They couldn't even keep it around that extra day. There are discrepancies in the news coverage of what the people were doing and their purposes of getting together at Chappaquiddick, and there were obviously discrepancies in the news coverage of what they were doing with Nelson Rockefeller. In fact, Hugh Murrow, the press secretary, went to Miss Megan Marshak's home at 4 a.m. after Rockefeller was declared officially dead at 12:30. He was at her home. We don't know whether he went with her right from the hospital to her place, but he was there when the Associated Press called at 4 a.m. from Washington, D.C., because she had worked for them for 6 months. And they're obviously planning their cover-up. And then Mr. Morrow had told the world that Rocky had died at his desk and he'd been with his chauffeur and bodyguard. Then he said he'd been with his bodyguard and Miss Marshak. And he had said Miss Marshak was 31, and then it was 21, and then they compromised for a nice middle 25. He was with her. She took the ambulance right to the hospital, and then the long aide of Nelson Rockefeller's was with her, so there didn't have to be any discrepancies. And yet at Chappaquiddick, the stories of the Boiler Room girls, the girls that were loyal to John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy, the employees for the Kennedy campaign, actually Mary Jo Kopechne had worked for Smothers, a long cohort of B.B. Rebozo and Richard Nixon, George Smothers, and Florida, and the background of these women was never exposed as being infiltrators into the camp and not actually working for Ted Kennedy's campaign or Robert Kennedy's campaign at all. Another similarity between Chappaquiddick and Nelson Rockefeller is that Mary Jo Kopechne would have lived if Ted Kennedy had called for help. There were lights on in homes. He passed the homes and walked down the road and then went back from the island to the mainland, and there was an air bubble in the top of the car, and she could have lived an hour. And it is now confirmed that Nelson Rockefeller would have lived if they'd called the emergency, but he passed out at 10:15, and it was 11:15 before anybody was called. And even then, they didn't mention it was Rockefeller. They might have gotten there 1 minute faster, but I doubt it. They got there pretty fast. And that extra hour would have made a difference in the life of Mary Jo Kopechne and Nelson Rockefeller. The doctors will have secrets, medical secrets, on Nelson Rockefeller. They say that the doctor mentioned last week said that he had a history of heart disease, and then the news media and the doctor previously said he had only missed 3 days of work in his entire life and was never sick. And as I said last week, I'm sure that the medical records of the cardiograph or the heart disease of the day he diagnosed it are non-existent, just like all the records and files of Chappaquiddick are non-existent. So I call this Rockefeller's Chappaquiddick affair. What we know is that Rockefeller was with Meghan Marshak at 9 o'clock. He called her and told her to come over. She didn't have very far to go because he was at 13 West 54th Street and she was at 25 West 54th Street. It was just like two doors away on the same side of the street, and she came running over in her black gown. And when he called her at 9 p.m., there's no indication that anybody was around. His chauffeur was parked around the corner on another block on 55th Street, and he called her, come on over, and she came running in her little black gown. At 10:15, she was there from 9 to 10:15, Meghan called Panchita Pierce. Now, that's a big part of the mystery that just came out this week since we did the tape last week, because she didn't call 911, the emergency. But here is the catch. She called Panchita Pierce to get Rockefeller's chauffeur, who was parked on 55th Street. Now, why would Panchita, a woman television actress working for a television program, who's a roommate of Meghan's, I can see where she would call her for help. But why would she know where Rockefeller's chauffeur was? That's pretty funny that at least Meghan wouldn't know, or Rockefeller wouldn't say when he was gasping, or she couldn't run out on the street and try to find him herself. There was a doorman outside, and she didn't run out to get the chauffeur. So one of the big question marks is, who is Panchita Pierce that she knows where Rockefeller keeps his chauffeur? Is she the control of Meghan Marshak? Because Marshak has to go to her for help. You get Rocky's chauffeur. And so then the question is, what does Panchita know about this affair that Meghan doesn't know? She's left alone in the house with Rocky, but she won't call emergency for 1 hour, and she won't get his bodyguard wherever they are. There were two of them. And she won't get the chauffeur, but Panchita knows where the chauffeur is. The officers arrived, two officers arrived, 11:18, 11:22. He was dead but warm, and they said he would have probably lived if they had called at 10:15. When the men arrived, a security guard of Rockefeller's was there by the name of Andrew Hoffman. And Andrew Hoffman is an important part of this story because he insisted that the paramedics take Rockefeller to Lenox Hospital instead of the nearest hospital. There was St. Clair Hospital where the medics had come from and the Roosevelt Hospital. But he insisted, Hoffman was there when the medics arrived. So somewhere between 10:15 when Rocky was passed out or could be injected with a poison, one of these cyanide Chappaquiddick poison in a food or a drink, or he could have been injected like the Jonestown and quietly just passed away in 5 minutes. But in the interim of 10:15 to 11:15, Hoffman had to appear. He wasn't with her when he passed out, or Hoffman would have called the emergency or the chauffeur right away, the bodyguard. So he took a powder with the chauffeur who was parked a block away, and he appears at 11:15 when the medics are there and the ambulance comes. He's in the room. So the question is, where was Andrew Hoffman from 9 to 11:15? That's a very important question to ask this week. And did this same woman, Panchita Pierce, know where he was? When she summoned the chauffeur didn't appear, and they didn't use Rocky's car. Hoffman appeared, his security guard, Andrew Hoffman. And I wonder what kind of a security guard he is, how long he worked for them. Remember, Thane Caesar was a security guard for Robert Kennedy, and Robert Kennedy was shot from behind, and Thane Caesar shot bullets from behind and has been charged by the researchers, not the courts, is having killed Robert Kennedy with a bullet 1 inch to the back of the head, and he's still at large. So the question is, where did Hoffman come from? How long did he work for Rockefeller, because he took control from Megan. It went from Megan to Punchetta Pierce, who allegedly called the chauffeur, but no chauffeur was on the premise in the room. But Hoffman shows up, security guard Hoffman, who orders the body to Lenox Hospital. And when the body goes to Lenox Hospital, it is admitted by Dr. Ernest Essikoff. And as of the timing of this tape, February the 9th, there is no record of who sent Dr. Essikoff to Lenox Hospital or when he was called. The question is, did Panchita call Essikoff and say, go to Lenox Hospital, or did she call him as soon as they heard Rocky had the heart attack so that Rocky would be received by Dr. Ernest Essikoff? That is the mystery that has to be solved. Who called Essikoff and told him to meet them at Lenox Hospital? Because when the body arrived there, Dr. Ernest Essikoff was there. And when did the call come? Did the call to Essikoff come to get to the hospital before the call for the ambulance 911 emergency? Which order did it come? Did they call the emergency first, then the family doctor, or did they make sure that the family doctor was at a particular hospital and Andrew Hoffman sent the body to that hospital, because then it was received in the hands of Dr. Essikoff and pronounced dead officially at 12:20, even though it was dead at 11:15 and was alive minutes before, still warm, and there was an hour lapse before this cast of characters went into operation. Panchita Pierce was called, Andrew Hoffman, and Dr. Ernest Essikoff. And then Essikoff goes to Dr. Michael Baden, who's the chief coroner, who was the witness before the House Select Committee, the chief medical advisor for the CIA committee of G. Robert Blakey, who covered up the assassination one more time of President John F. Kennedy. If he's capable of covering up the Kennedy assassination and a $6 million investigation, he's capable of covering up the murder of Nelson Rockefeller, who is no longer useful. He's expendable, and all of his associates had thrown him away. Even Mr. Brzezinski, I don't believe, was at that funeral. I didn't read that he was, and I've been trying to go through the newspapers and find it, and I can't find out where Brzezinski was at the time of the funeral of Rockefeller. There are some hard questions to ask, and I'm going over this really slowly because I want it to sink in that this, right in front of your eyes, is a Chappaquiddick. There are many people who've been taking these tapes and have kept up with my research in the last several years, but have not had a chance to hear me explain the Chappaquiddick and haven't read the little bit I've written about it. I haven't written enough on Chappaquiddick. And 1969 seems a long time ago. This is 10 years later. So I have to make the comparisons between Chappaquiddick, the same effect it has on the elections, and the way that these politicians are manipulated through the bedroom as well as through the rifle scope. Now, there are questions on the Rockefeller affair, which I want you to consider. Why didn't they go to the nearest hospital? Why did they have to go to Lenox Hospital instead of St. Clair or Roosevelt Hospital? Who called Rocky's doctor, as I said before, and when did they call them? Why did Megan Marshak call to get a chauffeur when there was no chauffeur around? A big answer to this puzzle is the house on 25 West 54th Street that Panchita Pierce lives in with Megan Marshak. I think you have to take the rent that these girls pay at this high-priced territory, just doors from Nelson Rockefeller, between 5th and 6th Street in New York City, and you have to take their salary, and you have to add up what their expenses were, and find out if this is a Tony Lasowitz type of Watergate safe house. Are these just two innocent girls, women, living in New York City that earn so much money that they can live two doors from Rockefeller, or are there more women living at that house? Is it a large house run such as Bobby Baker and Lyndon Johnson used to have, or Reverend Moon has put up women with politicians? This Ted Patrick, the deprogrammer, has said that the reason the congressman won't do anything about the cults or the Moonies And the operations that they're doing is that they have places in Washington, D.C., and I guess New York, too, and hotel rooms and music and women of all kinds and food, and they get the congressmen to bed, photograph them, and tape record them, and then the next day they play it back to them. And Ted Patrick claims that there's at least 100 men in Congress that he knows of by deprogramming certain Moonies that are in the control now because of this blackmail that has been going on. It's so rampant. So I think a big answer is take the salary of Marshak and Pierce or the many women living in there, find out their source of income, where they work or their taxes, and what kind of a house is it, and find out if it's a CIA safe house used for blackmailing. Is it the kind where they take these photographs in the wall? Is it a kind where they can send women out that can even kill, inject, and poison food in advance that Ms. Marshak was to serve? Did they have the keys to Rocky's house? Was there anything in the food or wine that he would take that he would die quickly? And it would simulate a heart attack. I think these things have to be solved, and I think the location of these two women in that high-priced locale just several doors from where Rockefeller lived would be an interesting question. At 9 o'clock, he goes there and picks up a phone, and she comes running down the street in her little black gown, and it would be interesting to note what kind of a residence that is at 25 West 54th Street in New York City. I asked some questions last week at the bottom of the sheet, page 2, side 2 of tape 374. I asked questions about Meghan Marshak, and they weren't answered that week, and now we'll try to answer some of those questions the best we can. I asked how old she was and how long did she know Nelson Rockefeller, because the very first story of respectability was 31 years of age, an associate that worked 4 years with him on an art book. Then later they said she was 21 years of age, would make a difference because then she started working for him when she was 17. But they compromised and found a birth date, October 1953, which makes her 25 and very respectable. Not too young and not too old, but 25 years old. So the answer is, even though there were all these discrepancies, and Hugh Morrow, the press secretary of Nelson Rockefeller, was giving them out, he was sitting with this woman from the time Rockefeller died, and at least up through 4 a.m. in the morning at her apartment. So there didn't have to be any discrepancies, and he should have known pretty well who Nelson Rockefeller was with. The question, how long did she know Rockefeller? All we have found out, or I found out in the last week, is the Associated Press said that she worked for them for 6 months. There hasn't been any more about the art book. There hasn't been anything about what he was writing or the project. There are just some articles that she came from Van Nuys, California, and lived in California. There is actually no date that she met him since the first cover story, and no length of time and no indication that of an art book, the manuscript that he was leaning over when he died, obviously is questionable. But how long she worked for him or where she knows Panchita Pierce, I didn't even ask that last week, we don't know. Where did she work before meeting him? She worked in Van Nuys, California at newspaper work. I asked the question, is she a J. Walter Thompson girl? Did she come out of the same ilk as a Terry Buford? Is she part of the Rocky team or Donald Segretti's? Where did this woman come from in California, and where is she going next? What kind of a job is she going to get? Is there any connection of her to the Tim Stone, Stanford, Jonestown connections, or the UCLA, Ronald Reagan connections, the plans for those secret electrode implants on prisoners and poor blacks? Being as she comes from Van Nuys, California, which is very close to the working base of the whole Reagan machinery, and she's right there in with Rocky and ready to leave within the next 2 weeks. She was to leave in 2 weeks, and within 3 weeks of 1 week from her leaving, Reagan was to set up his headquarters for his campaign for presidency. I think we have to know more about her California base. I asked last week where she came from, but we don't really know much about how long she worked for him. I also asked, was this a casual affair where they were just caught, or was she sent with a purpose having greater repercussions? And I'll go a little more into this on the other side of this tape, but you know by my mentioning the types of motives for killing him that I believe that there are more serious repercussions